The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, glad you've been with us on SB Nation AM. It is 9-4, Seattle leading Oakland. It's Major League Baseball time. Okay, maybe not. But it's still the regular season opener. Did you even know that? Yeah, they're playing in Tokyo, a two-game set between the Mariners and the A's. Ichiro getting a standing ovation. Oh, my God, they love him. It's unbelievable. I just saw some video of it. It's kind of emotional. I kind of dig it. I got to be honest with you. But anyway, Major League Baseball kicked off its season today, this morning, with these games in Tokyo, Japan. I didn't know that. I wonder if how many people did. But nevertheless, baseball season is now underway. But this is March, so we always kick into college basketball. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll be opening up the tournament. I haven't filled out my bracket yet because, like Ron, I kind of wait until after the play-in games, and because I have zero respect for the play-in games or any of their participants, apparently. I don't really think you're in the tournament if you're in the play-in game. I don't know. I hate to insult Belmont, for example, but they didn't win a tournament game yet. They'll win one if they beat Maryland, but they didn't win one yet. Although, officially they did, I guess. But anyway, Belmont is a perfect example of what I think is the flavor of this tournament. As we were kind of talking about earlier, this tournament is about all the different teams that you get to see who will represent all of the conferences of college basketball. It isn't 64 of the best teams coming together. It is 64 teams, but some you never heard of, or some, you know, you never got to see play, or some players you never saw. It's the flavor of it. But nevertheless, remember this. In the end, though, I want to see the best teams in college basketball get to the Final Four. I want to see the matchups of a Kentucky, North Carolina, or a Duke, Kentucky, or Virginia versus Gonzaga. I want to see the best teams. It doesn't have to be all the number ones, but it isn't to me about the upsets. The upsets are the good flavor part of this. They're fun. It's great in the beginning, but I only can take it to a certain point, and then I really want to see some meaningful matchups of the top teams in college basketball. And I hope that's what we get from this tournament. We usually do, but I hope we get that. But it all starts on Thursday. Again, no offense to St. John's or Arizona State, for that matter. But coming up, we'll evaluate the baseball contract of Mike Trout, coming up on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. Does sports have a bubble that could burst? Or is it just too unrealistic to think that...
You mean like the housing market?
Like the housing market,
no.
Yeah.
I don't think it can.
I don't think it's going to.
I think it's a safe bet that sports will always be in, I mean, in our culture.
No, I don't mean it like that.
No, but I mean, like,
I'm not making myself clear. Is there a bubble where we start seeing there's a moment where sports, whatever sport says, whoa, we were crazy. We're not doing that anymore. Baseball players, you're getting $3 million a year.
Oh, okay. No, because if they did that, they would have done that after A-Rod.
No. Yes and no. Okay, listen. The reason the players get money, this kind of money, is because there's money there.
Right.
We as a public continue to buy tickets. Right? Television goes, we'll pay $150 million like they did with the Angels a year to broadcast your rights. But the problem is that there's a trickle-down effect, right? If I then need to up my ticket prices, do people still go? If I need to sell advertising to make up the $150 million I paid to the Angels, when do the advertisers go, too rich for my blood, I'll find my advertising in something else? Like, there's a trickle-down effect to what you're doing financially in sports. And I wonder if there's a bubble that will burst where everything comes back down, or it just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. People do this all the time. They whenever they see a Mike Trout contract in any sport, they say, "Oh, this is insane. These players shouldn't be getting so much." And then I counter with, "Well, the money's there. I'm more of a player guy than an owner's guy. If the money's there, I'd rather it go to the players than just sit in the owner's big safe." And then they say, well, they should give it back to the fans in terms of lower ticket prices. And I've always said the two aren't mutually exclusive, right? The tickets are a supply and demand thing, right? I mean, you can go to an NBA game for $8 in some markets because the team is lousy and nobody wants to buy the tickets.
Right,
so you can get it on the secondary market.
But
if you keep paying top dollar for tickets, they're not going down. They don't care about the affordability of a family. To them, if you're the Angels, are you worried about some middle-class family like not being able to afford to go to a game? No, 3 million people are coming through the turnstiles.
Yep.
That's what you care about.
And here's my counter-argument to that. Even if fans decided to stop going to the games, that would just mean that, you know, there's still popularity of people watching it on television, which would then, you know, TV rights would start to go up.
Sure, that's right. There's always a counter.
Because
they'll
make that extra money that they would, you know, any lost revenue they would have in, you know, say ticket prices going down. We've been hearing about this with the NFL for, you know, the last couple of years now, that, you know, attendance at the games have been slowly declining, people thinking the NFL's in trouble. The NFL's not in trouble. Because, I mean, maybe attendance is declining at the games because, you know, honestly, a family of four cannot afford to go to an NFL football game without, you know, just without the presence of mind saying, hey, you know what, I'm dropping about $300-$400 today. Or I could watch it at home on television and, you know, experience the NFL up front and close, you know, and just be immersed into it all. Then the TV rights are just, I mean, they're going to get more and more expensive for and TV is definitely not going to stop showing the NFL.
Well, no, but that's the thing. That's where the NFL has networks over the barrel, because when people talk about declining ratings, right? Remember when they were saying, "Oh, the NFL is slowly dying. Look at the ratings; they're terrible." No, the ratings are dying. That matters to the network. Yeah, there's some guarantees that you got to, but that really only that mostly matters to the network that paid the money. But the NFL already got its check.
Yep.
For that year, right? So the NFL can say, okay, that's problematic, and advertisers are going to get money back from the network. But if you want to renegotiate with us and you don't like the price we're charging, we'll find somewhere else to put these games. And networks don't want. Ask NBC when they lost the NFL before getting it back on Sunday nights. Ask NBC how that went down for their network when they made a decision to cut NFL out of their budget. But the rights fees for that, right? They ended up partnering with the XFL because they needed football back on television, right? So that's where the NFL and these sports, you're right. Listen, $150 million a year for Angels baseball on TV is a significant amount of money. That's a lot of money, but it's not going to be $10. Like, if it goes down, it might go down to $125 million. But again, there, you're going to see this. The reason I bring this up is because if you're blown away by the Mike Trout numbers, wait 5 years. The number is going to be 600 million.
Yep.
Right? It's going to be 650. It's going to be seven. Maybe in my kid's lifetime, a player will sign $1 billion deal for 10 years or something. It's, but
God, I hate to think that unless it's my son.
Right. It's incredible. It is absolutely incredible. And it doesn't have an end in sight. People have been thinking that there was a bubble for years and years and years.
Well, that's what they said.
And, you know, sports recovers after every sports recovers after controversies. You can't listen. There are a lot of people in this business that we're in who staked a flag in the death of the NFL, who put a flag in the sand saying the NFL is dead because they did this with the anthem, or they did what they're doing, you know, or they did this with that. That is not true at all. This league is not going anywhere. You're not killing it. You're just hurting it, but it's healable, right? That's just the way this is. This is how the league makes every dime it pays its players from the television contracts and loans before they've sold one ticket. They've already managed to, they've already got the money for the cap.
Yeah, I was going to say, before they even sell one ticket, they've already, venture a guess that they're probably better than breaking even before the season even begins.
Exactly.
For 1 foot steps in front of the turnstile, they're already in the black.
And because outside of the Cowboys, every jersey you buy gets split between every team.
Yep.
Except the Cowboys. The Cowboys have their own deal. But so if you buy a Redskins jersey, the Steelers get a piece of that. So they're all uniform in that regard. So this isn't like every entity for itself. That's not the way the NFL works. And for that matter, Major League Baseball doesn't really work that way either. I mean, so to me, when you get these big contracts, even in basketball for that matter, but basketball is at least cap oriented. This is insane. They could have, the Angels could have paid Mike Trout $1 billion. And if they were willing to pay the luxury tax on that, there's nothing anybody could do about it. If they were willing to do the whatever penalty was for being over the luxury tax, they're totally fine with it.
Now,
they're totally fine with it. Nothing you could do.
The only thing I could see happening in MLB, which it still wouldn't burst the bubble, is them negotiating a cap just so we stop having, because recently, if you look at it recently, it's the same teams in the playoffs year after year after year. And so I can see them instituting a cap where, you don't think so?
Never. That's one of the reasons we had the strike in 94. They're never going to have a salary gap. The players have fought this for my whole life. That's the reason the 94 strike happened. The owner said, we can't do this. We have to have a cap. And the players said, no, you are not going to have a cap. And they said, oh, yes, we are. They said, no, you're not. And we're going to strike. And they struck, and they ended up canceling the World Series. That players union is never going to agree to a cap.
All right. That's a strong players union.
The others did. That's
the other guys need to get on board and say, yeah. What are you guys doing differently over there?
No, this is one of, listen, I've talked to so many NFL players doing shows with them and whatnot over the years, and they all say the same things. Like, yeah, man, we get screwed. Like, you don't realize how we get screwed. It's not like the NBA where the cap is so big and there's such a small amount of players.
And lately it's been increasing year after year because of television revenue, international TV rights.
And there's bird rights, and there's all different ways that an NBA player can get just a boatload of money without feeling the pinch of a salary cap. But the NFL is the one where it is so hard in terms of guarantees and what you get and how you negotiate and job security and all of that you don't get to have. And the owners of Major League Baseball, George Steinbrenner used to warn about it. I mean, all this stuff, but like I said earlier today, the players have, what they've done is they played this out, and Donald Fair, who was their player union rep for a long period of time, had always said, don't give in to this because the owners can't contain themselves. And if they can't contain themselves, this is an exponential game we're talking about in terms of revenue, right? We're talking about an exponential game. So the guy that makes $20 million, before you know it, you're making $40 million. Before you know it, you're going to make $60 million a year, right? It's just going to exponentially increase because owners are crazy like this. And think about Artie Moreno for a second. He's got Mike Trout. I was saying this earlier. He's got Mike Trout, right? Now there's rumors that he wants to go back east, play for the Phillies or the Yankees. He wants to go back to New Jersey. He wants to go back to his hometown. Bryce Harper is making pleas. You have to sign Bryce, right? You have to. He is your cash cow, right? You're looking at all the revenue that is being generated by his presence. How many people are paying top-of-the-line ticket prices for it? What is the television revenue is there because of this. Merchandising is X, right? All of the things that come into play because Mike Trout's on your team. So you have to negotiate. What's the starting number? Before you're in a position where, holy cow, I got to keep this guy. What's the starting number? $400 million? That's the starting number? It gets up to $430 before we settle on a deal? It's nuts. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. And you don't have the guilt in baseball. This is one thing NFL players always felt. They hated when fans would get on them for their contracts, that it like they should take a hometown discount. You know, they would hear it from fans. Like, you should cut your salary so we can afford a wide receiver. Like, that's not my problem that we don't have a wide receiver. I'm providing my service for this amount of dollars. Mike Trout doesn't have to hear it from fans that he's hurting the team because they can't afford a pitcher. Mike Trout's like, well, they're the Angels. Let them find a way to get a pitcher. I don't have to deal with that. But again, going back to the whole idea that there's so much revenue here that's just not going to go away. And again, I mean, it's just, I mean, isn't it laughable when you think about how many people thought the NFL was going to die?
Like, it always is laughable. Can branch down to other sports too. You know, just look at the MLS. That revenue has grown year after year after year as well.
Yeah, that is true.
It's been slow, you know, but it's starting to gain legs. And you have, I mean, I never would have thought it'd be possible for there to be players in the MLS that would make almost $1 million a year. But
I agree with that. It's amazing you said that. I agree. I used to work with the Rapids.
We are far away from anyone signing a 10-year, $250 million contract or 12-year, $430 million.
About 15 years ago, I was doing stuff with the Colorado Rapids, and I remember the guy I was doing stuff with was a real soccer guy, and he was telling me, hey, this league is making strides, and that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I had a buddy who was playing in it, and he had a salary. He wouldn't divulge what his salary was per year, but he often hinted that he got more perks from being able to go to the Nike store and being able to pick up stuff.
Yeah.
That was part of his contract, was that he was able to go to the Nike store and, you know, shop. Yeah, like an expense account per month.
That is pretty sweet.
but
that's part of his deal.
That was part of his deal, and that outweighed that outweighed what he was actually being paid to play.
Yeah.
So I have to imagine he wasn't getting paid a lot. He was on an MLS team. He was on the Chicago Fire, but he wasn't a starter.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I go back to, what was it, the Marlins? Somebody didn't want to release their finances, baseball team.
I think it was the Marlins
that didn't want to, and because they don't want you to really know how much they're making. if you really knew from concessions to merchandise to tickets to revenue to advertising, right. They don't want you to know.
Derek Jeter's offloading everything because he wants to make his money back first.
That's right. That's 100% right. SB Nation AM, it is SB Nation Radio, 800-777-2907. Are you buying the coaching rumors in Los Angeles? That is coming up next. Yeah, we like the bomb, 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 bomb.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Michael on Twitter says, speaking of the MLS, because we're just talking about the sports bubble, Atlanta United tickets are almost as, if not more expensive than Atlanta Falcons. The cheapest ticket you could find for the MLS Cup at Mercedes-Benz Stadium was over $280. That's wild.
That's a scene.
That's wild, but it was the MLS Cup.
But, Michael, you can't complain because your concessions are considerably cheaper than the rest of the country combined.
Yeah, Michael, you pay $280 for the ticket, but you pay $3 for a hamburger. I think you're making out pretty good there. I think it all comes out in a wash. Oh, my God. We used to give Rapids tickets away for nothing.
If you pay $280 for a ticket, how many free refills are you going back for?
Oh, I'm going for a ton. Are you kidding me? I'm getting my money's worth. I'm sweating that one out.
And when, if we're talking about, you know, like how, you know, contracts are being adopted across the country, you know, weather the bubble, when can we start talking about stadiums mimicking Arthur Blank?
Absolutely.
Across 100%. The country.
Ron, make that your, like, cause the show.
Yeah, it's going to be my, it's, you know what? If you want to donate now, I'll set up a.
let's get the campaign going for cheaper concessions. I think you're absolutely right. He's on to something that's big time. You know what's funny about Atlanta United? I'll tell you this quick thing. So when I worked in Colorado, when I got to Colorado in 2001. Yep. And I worked for the station, and we were the flagship station for the Rapids. And because the owner of the Rapids was the owner of our station, Philip Anschutz, at the time. And so he loved the Rapids, and we had this pregame. I was on the pregame and the postgame, and I know nothing. I got to be honest with you. I knew nothing about soccer. And they assigned me this this pregame, postgame for the Rapids. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I, you know, frantically researched, but they used to play at Invesco Field back where the Broncos play. Now it's Sports Authority Field, whatever it's called now, but they used to play there. And so they would get a decent crowd, right? They would get a crowd of like 20,000 people, maybe. Yeah. Like they would have a promotion or something. And they would, like, a lot of people would come to the games. Families would come to the games, but it looked like nobody was there because they were playing in a 77,000 seat stadium. Right. So they moved to Dick's Sporting Good Park in Commerce City. And now they play in a soccer stadium. Right. So it's cozy. It's got a great feel. It's loud. It's really a great atmosphere. Great for families, great location. It's perfect for what they do. I watch Atlanta United games in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and it's 77,000 people. Like, it's packed. Like, they're going nuts. I'm like thinking, oh, they don't have to go to a small soccer stadium. They got a football crowd going on at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for Atlanta United. And I wonder if it gets so popular that they're like, boy, these stadiums are tiny. What were we thinking? 30 grand? Were we crazy?
Let's probably this, like no, right? I guarantee.
Like like back then, it was reasonable, right? Like no matter what the Rapids did, 25 grand was the most that they were going to get.
Look no further than Fenway Park and Wrigley Field.
Okay,
they have over time they have kind of found ways to build and add more seats.
Yes, exactly. No, that's
because
exactly
if you think
right.
back
yeah.
in the day, you know, yeah, they weren't just sitting there going, thinking, oh, we got to build a 50,000 seat stadium.
Yeah,
they're not 30, thinking that.
30,000 is good enough. It's perfect. Cozy ballpark. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
You know, and that's why, I mean, still to this day, it's real. I mean, you know, they have a rabid fan bases, but it's still hard to get tickets because there aren't a whole lot to go around.
They were trying to build a new stadium for the Red Sox. There was always a proposal, like, to build a new stadium for the Red Sox. And people would go nuts. They go, what are you, crazy? So it's Fenway Park, for crying out loud. They were trying. It was funny because they were trying to move. There was one proposal where they're going to move the stadium to some place and they were going to call it the new Fenway Park. But people locally said, you can't do that because the reason it's called Fenway Park is because it's on the Fenway. That's a location. It's not a name of a person. Or it's not like Wrigley, right?
Wait, what?
It's on the Fenway. So it's called Fenway Park. And I thought that was kind of weird. Then I never forget one of my friends. He made this great, great point. I loved it because they used to talk about if they were going to build a new Fenway Park or a new stadium for the Red Sox or the Patriots. They're trying to get the Patriots to Boston. They were going to put it. There was always these proposals in these empty areas of South Boston that they could use to build these stadiums. Now, people who know this, you listen. If you live near a stadium, God bless you. But nobody wants to live near a stadium, right? I mean, nobody wants to live next to. You know, these places.
No, you feel like you want to.
You want to, but
that's
you don't.
That's
right?
The problem. Like, yeah, there's no way you would.
There's really no way you want to live.
And then, unless you're like
places.
In your 20s.
Right,
you
when you're 20s,
no
it's cool, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'll live across the street. That'd be fun.
Exactly. Like, I went to Yankee Stadium, and there's apartments like right across the street. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool to live there.
Oh,
I always thought
it'd be cool when I was younger when I'd watch games at Wrigley Field because they always had day games. You know, even before they had night games.
Sure.
I always thought those apartments that overlooked now that, you know, they're kind of building up Wrigley to block those apartments. But you know the ones I'm talking about right behind left field. I always thought that'd be a fantastic place to live.
Yeah,
so
me
you
too.
You got a baseball game every single day.
So the Patriots are playing in Foxborough, which is like a half an hour drive, but it's really hard in traffic. It's one road in, one road out. They were going to talk about the Patriots coming to Boston because there was a time when in between ownerships. They were trying to make a time for the Patriots to stay in. So there was this proposal to build either Red Sox Stadium or the Patriots Stadium in South Boston. And I thought it was a cool idea, right? I was in the area at the time. It was like early 90s. And I thought it was a cool idea because I hated going to Foxborough to cover Patriots games. So I said, boy, they should do that. And my friend goes, that'll never happen. I go, why not? We'll bring the Patriots to Boston. How great. He goes, listen, Tony, they're not putting a stadium in South Boston. And I said, why not? He goes, listen, those people threw tea overboard because they didn't want to pay taxes for it. Okay. They're not going to. I was like, oh, that's right.
All right, real quick. Yeah. Maybe you can help explain this to me. Cause I decided like, what is the seating capacity at Fenway Park? Right.
37,000.
Okay. Yeah. Now they have they have day capacity and night capacity.
Oh, how do you get, what's the difference?
That's what I wanted to ask you.
I've been there both times. I've never seen an area shut down for the day.
There's a good difference. Day capacity is 37,300.
Right.
Night capacity is almost 37,800.
Okay, that is significant.
How do you get 500 extra people at night that you can't get in the daytime?
That's right. Putting seats on the top of the Green Monster was the most brilliant idea in the history of renovations.
Yep.
Like, without question.
Without having to change the park.
Fantastic. We'll talk Major League Baseball coming up next as we get into the Mike Trout situation and the fact that the season's already begun.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, the Major League Baseball season actually underway as the Mariners lead the A's 9-7 in Tokyo. But the big story, Mike Trout and his $430 million deal. Steve Gardner, USA Today, joins us to talk about that and a whole lot more around Major League Baseball. How are you, Steve?
I'm great, Tony. How are you?
Good. So the Angels get 430. Is this about the number, if you were pegging this early to see what they would need to do to land Mike Trout, is this around the ballpark where you would project?
I guess so, but, you know, he could have asked for and been justified for getting $500 million for that amount of time, so... You know, you're the best player in baseball. You don't know what baseball revenues are going to do over the next decade, but you have a feeling that they're probably going to continue to go up. I think Mike Trout could be, dare we say, a bargain for the Angels for $430 million.
I saw these numbers, and I see the people who crunch that, and based on WAR and based on the value of a win and how it projects, that he is a bargain. Is this how it's being looked by people? Is this, listen, if you really crunch the numbers, this is a deal?
I think so. I mean, it sounds ludicrous on the face of it, but you see baseball is doing so well, you know, and with the revenues being up and everything, still very, very popular with the fans. And Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. So the question now is, can the Angels take whatever payroll they have left over that span and actually build a good team around Mike Trout and get him to the playoffs? Because that's where we really haven't seen Mike Trout do Mike Trout things in the postseason. He's only been in one postseason series, and that was short-lived. So, yeah, we need to see some results from this, from not only Mike Trout, but also the Angels.
I guess this would be hard to measure economically or in any other metric, but is Major League Baseball hurt by the fact that Mike Trout doesn't get in our living rooms in October?
Yeah, I'd have to say so, just because that was one of the things, you know, Commissioner Rob Manfred was asked last year and sort of let it slip that, you know, well, Mike Trout really doesn't do a whole lot to market himself. Well, the problem is, I think, has been that the Angels have not been a marquee franchise because they haven't won like the Dodgers have, you know, like the Cubs have, like the Yankees have. So you get that a little bit, but hey, Los Angeles is still a pretty big market, and you know, there's still some time for him to, you know, he's played in the All-Star games. You know, he won back-to-back All-Star MVP awards a couple years ago. So he has performed on the big stage, But, you know, he's kind of a guy that doesn't promote himself that much. But, hey, his performance and then what he does on the field should certainly speak for itself.
There was a period of time this offseason where we were waiting, waiting, and waiting. Manny Machado, Bryce Harper. And now we've got four really big deals to process, from Nolan Arenado all the way up to Mike Trout. Steve, what does this say about the finances of Major League Baseball? What does it say about the health of Major League Baseball that we've got these in a rather quick period of time?
I don't know if it says a whole lot, to tell you the truth, Tony. I think the big stars are always going to get paid, and I think that's what is really the takeaway that I have from all of this. I mean, you know that Nolan Arenado and you know that Mike Trout and Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, those guys, people come to the ballpark to see those guys. And when you are the best in your field, you deserve to get paid. I think where baseball is kind of, you know, treading on some thin ice is with the other players, you know, the minor leaguers, number one, but also some of the veterans, the free agency we saw this offseason, second offseason in a row, kind of slow, to tell you the truth, for those free agents who've worked, you know, their entire careers to get to the point where they can choose their team and get those big money deals. They just haven't come for the majority of those guys. So even though the top of the pecking order, those big stars are getting paid, I still think that there's some unhappiness maybe in the ranks overall among the major league players. And we've got a couple years until the CBA expires. So hopefully, you know, we can get some of those issues resolved.
All right, so I said the Major League Baseball season's underway in Tokyo with Seattle and the A's. But when you look at the regular season coming up, the Yankees won 100 games but finished 8 games back of the Red Sox. Did they get better? Did they do things this offseason to make their team better than 100 wins?
I think so. I mean, James Paxton was an excellent signing for, or an excellent acquisition for them. And so they needed somebody to come in, you know, give them another ace in that starting rotation, which really, I think you look at it overall, you know, the offense is fantastic for the Yankees, but the starting rotation kind of a little bit iffy. So they bolstered that, just signed Gio Gonzalez to a minor league deal to give them some depth while they deal with some injuries. So I think this Yankee team is better. The Red Sox may have taken a step backward without Craig Kimbrell there at the back of the bullpen. That could cost them a couple of wins. So I think this is going to be a stellar American League East race. And if I had to say right now and handicap it, I'd say the Yankees are slightly better than the Red Sox right now.
All right, let's go to the National League East, because one player switching a team in Bryce Harper to Philadelphia could change the dynamic. Can Atlanta win enough games to hold off the Phillies? What does this mean for the Nationals? When you look at that division, that one player switch, how do you see it line up now?
I see the Phillies as the team to beat, and it's not only because of Bryce Harper. It's also JT Realmuto. It's also Gene Segura. The Phillies made several nice moves this offseason to strengthen their overall team. So I think that, and once you throw in Bryce Harper, obviously he tips the scales a little bit as well. I think they're very good, but I also think that the Mets made some strides this offseason. The Nationals are still very good, and the Nationals may be better than they were last year, even without Harper, because of Patrick Corbin coming in and giving them a third kind of ace in that rotation, and some of the younger guys can only continue to get better in Washington. And, yeah, the Braves, Ronald Acuna Jr. could be a perennial MVP candidate for years and years to come. So the Braves are a good team as well. This is going to be, I think, the most interesting division in baseball, because all four of those teams could win, you know, 90 games or above.
I have to ask you about Arizona, because I remember following the NL West last year, and it seemed like a three-team race, and then Arizona fell off the map for a bit, and now they're falling off the map even more. What was the mindset of the organization that they went, all right, let's get rid of some guys and start again?
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of those things.
They were in it, right, in August. They were, like, in a race,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think the ownership group there is a little bit concerned about, you know, whatever finances. You give Paul Goldschmidt, I don't want to say give him away, but you trade him to another team, and the return, we will see. But it didn't look great on the surface there with Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly. I mean, not household names by any stretch of the imagination. They lost A.J. Pollock in free agency. They weren't going to pay those big stars to and lost Patrick Corbin as well. They weren't going to pay those guys market value, and as a result, they've taken a step back into what looks like rebuilding mode, which you know is a shame because they were right there, as you said, with Colorado and the Dodgers, and at one point it looked like a pretty good bet to go to the playoffs. Now I think it's going to be a while before they get back there.
The Rockies. Do the Rockies have staying power as an NL West contender? They locked in Arenado, but they lost some other guys. But is it a good year and sustain it, or is this a good, really good baseball team for the next couple of years?
I like what the Rockies are doing, and the key for them is the starting rotation. I mean, they got great seasons from Kyle Freeland, kind of out of nowhere last year, and Germán Márquez. You know, if those guys can be continue to be solid starters and be able to pitch in Coors Field. That was kind of the thing that we've never seen from the Rockies is starting pitchers who can excel at home. And both of those guys did. If they can continue that, the offense is certainly good. And they've got some young guys, too, coming up through the system. They could be pretty good. So you add them to Arenado and Trevor Story, who's one of the top players in the game now, too. I think the Rockies will challenge the Dodgers. I don't know that they are good enough to beat them, but certainly they'll contend for a playoff spot.
Anybody in the West outside? I mean, I don't even know in Oakland because they do roller coasters, right? They compete, then they die, then they compete, then they die. But anybody in contention in the West for the race with the Astros?
I don't think so. I think the Astros are the class of that division by a decent margin. The A's kind of overachieved in my mind last year, so good for them. We'll see if they can continue to do that. But Houston is just so solid up and down the roster in the bullpen. And they made a few financial commitments yesterday to some players that they want to keep around for a while. So I think the structure is there for Houston to continue to be a contender for the next several years and possibly go back to the World Series again. I really like the Astros.
Does the Alex Bregman deal, that's 6 years, $100 million, does that indicate any of the trickle-down effect? I mean, Bregman's a star, but at 24, fourth season, $100 million, is there a trickle-down effect with the deals that were coming to the higher-ups?
Possibly. I mean, again, Bregman is a legitimate star and somebody, talk about MVP award winners in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
That was Bregman last year. So, I think the stars are going to get paid and the Astros have now locked up Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman for goodness, the next 6 years or so. That's good for them. That's good for baseball. They bought out some of his arbitration years and the first two, I think, free agent years. So they may have paid a little bit less to do that than they would have, obviously, had he been a free agent and they had to, pay Bryce Harper type money. So it's one of those. The Astros, I think, want to be cost. They want that cost certainty, and for somebody like an Alex Bregman who's it'll be pretty good for a long time. You like to lock him up. I think they did a good job with that.
Steve, good stuff. Really appreciate it as always. Hope we catch up with you soon, and let's get ready for the season. Thanks a lot, my friend.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
You got it. Steve Gardner, USA Today on Major League Baseball, which started today, in case you didn't know. It's going on right now. Bet you didn't know that. But there's probably some of you going, no, I did know that. I pay attention to the sport, unlike you. So I get it. Don't worry. I get it. But Seattle and Oakland out in Tokyo. And right now, the Mariners leading 9-7 in the bottom of the ninth inning. Is that at the Tokyo Dome? Is that where they're playing this game?
Yes.
All right. Because everything's at the Tokyo Dome.
Do they have any other place?
I don't know any other place that they could play other than the Tokyo Dome.
Maybe the base of Mount Fuji?
Maybe so. Isn't the Olympics going to be in Tokyo?
Yeah.
In 2020?
I think the entire Olympics will be held in the Tokyo Dome.
Exactly. We don't have to build anything. We have the Tokyo Dome.
They could put a pool in right field at it. Maybe a track that goes around the pool. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I don't know where they put the sharks.
My brother's been to Tokyo. He says it's a really great experience. You got to go out there and you'd see it. He said he liked it.
Yeah, it looks like
he didn't get to do a lot. He was there for business, but he said it was pretty cool.
It kind of looks like Vegas Light.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It doesn't have all the sin of Vegas, but all the glitz and glamour of Vegas.
I will say this, because I'm a Disney parks-aholic. Tokyo Disney is one of the best run parks. It's not run by Disney. It's run by another company. They license the name and license the characters. And they say it's 1,000 times better run than anything that Disney runs.
Not surprising.
They say it's cleaner. It's fantastic. The rides are innovative, all keeping up with the technology, everything. So it's kind of interesting. It's a really good city. I'm glad Major League Baseball is starting there. I just wish they told me. That's all. That's all I'm asking. Is that too much to ask? That's it. That's all.
Just wanted a little heads up.
Just send me an email. Say, Tony, by the way, it starts on Wednesday. I know you're thinking April or late March, but no, it's actually starting today. So good for baseball. That's actually in all seriousness. It's a good PR move. It's cool for Ichiro. It's cool for the Mariners, who have a lot of Japanese players, and Oakland, just to start the season in Tokyo. I think it's pretty good for baseball. All right, it's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so tonight it's the Eagles of North Carolina Central against the Bisons of North Dakota State. That is the first four. You know who gets, you know what happens to the winner of this game? They become the meal for Zion Williamson. Yum. And then St. John's and Arizona State. That's a pretty good game, actually. That is going to be your nightcap of the first four.
That's a decent NCAA tournament game if they decided to put it in the actual tournament.
That's right. Chris Mullen is the head coach of St. John's. He played for St. John's back in the Louis Carnesecca days. A lot of people don't know this, but the NCAA championship, Villanova won against Georgetown in 1985. Chris Mullen and St. John's were in that Final Four. It was a Big East Final Four, except for Memphis. They were the other one. But they had three teams in the Final Four, including Chris Mullen, St. John's. They were the Redmen at the time. Now they're the Red Storm. But, yeah, Mullen was a good basketball player.
I mean, kind of a derogatory name, right?
That was, yeah. That was, well, Redmen. You know, back then they didn't know. They thought it was honoring whoever, and they didn't care. And then, you know, political correctness came in. They changed it to Red Storm. But anyway, Chris Mullen is the coach, and he's going up against Bobby Hurley in Arizona State.
How about that?
Our very own Bobby Hurley. I say our very own because it's kind of like our generation's point guard.
Yeah. I mean, both of them kind of, well, no, Chris Mullen was more of a forward, right?
I believe he was, yeah. I was too young to watch Mullen play. I wasn't like,
you were not.
As a kid. Yeah, I was. It was like 11.
You know who Mullen? He was on the 92.
Oh, I know who won. I know he was the NBA player. I mean, when he's playing in college.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I didn't watch him in college either.
Yeah, I didn't watch him in college. But Bobby Hurley, I watched a lot when he was in college at Duke.
Yeah.
And now it's Bobby Hurley and Chris Mullen.
America's point guard.
That's right. Bobby Hurley, the son of his dad, is one of the best high school coaches in the history of high school basketball.